inbound. He gets it over to the doctor. Tie ball game. Here's a shot. Julius. He scores! At the buzzer. And the Nets win 120 to 118.
I think we see Willis coming out.
Here comes Willis. And the crowd is going wild.
The New York Knickerbockers have won the 1969-70 World Championship of Basketball.
Carter over to Kidd. Baseline drive. Kidd throws it up. Oh! How did he do it?
Randle on the drive. Stripped by Butler. Randle gets it back. Randle puts up a three. Bang! Bang! Randle knocks down the three with 0.7 seconds remaining.
With full court press coverage on all of the signings, trades, big games, and everything Knicks, Nets, and across the association, this is Pick and Pod on WFUV Sports.
What's up, everybody, and welcome into a very special edition of Pick and Pod. Along with Chris Carino and Chris Persianen, I'm Colin Locker and happy to be with you. Tonight is Game 6 between the New York Knicks and the Philadelphia 76ers. The Sixers, of course, took a dramatic Game 5 win on Tuesday night at Madison Square Garden. They won that one 112-106. The Knicks had a chance to close out the series late in that one, had a 6-point lead, but Tyrese Maxey shined the brightest on that given occasion. 46 points, 9 assists for him, a huge 4-point play to put the Sixers over the top. We always talk about how special the playoffs can be, Chris. This series has been no different. It's coming down to the wire. Tonight will be a critical game in Philadelphia.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, I talked about it in my beat report from down there at the Wells Fargo Center after game three. Pat Riley always says a playoff series doesn't start until a road game is won by any, you know, any road team. And the Knicks started the series. Game four, go up 3-1. The thing about this Sixers team, we said it from the series preview, Colin. Second seed, 50 wins. Seventh seed, 47 wins. These are two teams that were pretty much on the same level in the regular season. And if you take a look, again, at the numbers, Sixers, 31-8 in the regular season when Embiid played. You know, if you include the 3-2 playoff series, the 1-0 play-in venture, it becomes 35-10. So 35-10 when Embiid plays this season. The Knicks were 20-3 when OG Anunoby plays. Now they are 23-5. So roughly the same percentages there. These are two really strong teams. The Knicks have better depth, and the Sixers have two stars. The Knicks have one. So it's about as evenly matched as it gets. Nick Nurse, Tom Thibodeau, two kind of similar coaches in regards to general approach, but overarchingly, that they're pretty evenly matched when it comes to considering all factors. This has been an amazing series. I said before the playoffs, this was the best first round series in either conference. I think it has proven to be that way. Especially when you look at the results, you know, everyone excited about Lakers and Nuggets rematch. And it was the same game every single time. Lakers go up 10, 12, 16, 20, Nuggets win.
They won one.
Yeah, so now they're 8-1-8 over the two in the last year in playoff games. Like, it's just
they've led them for 75% of that time.
More, it was the same series and the same game every time. Wolves, Suns, hilarious. You know, whatever. We won't get into that.
Hilarious.
The guy, like, we won't get into talking about the guy who hasn't made it out of the second round since 2019. We won't get into the Jimmy-less Heat, the Giannis Dame-less Bucks. Like the best first round series has easily been Knicks Sixers, and I think tonight, you know, recording this on Thursday, May 2nd, gives us the opportunity to preview Game 6. Some people thought that wouldn't be necessary. For fans of basketball everywhere, they're glad they get to see it tonight. 9 p.m. start time. For an Eastern Conference playoff game. Very weird. But, you know, it's going to be a good one. And I think you've seen Embiid's best punch, Sixers won. You've seen Maxey's best punch, Sixers won. The Knicks, when Dante DiVincenzo makes multiple three-pointers, have won those games. The team that has won the rebounding battle has won that game every single time. So five games played, the three games the Knicks won, they out-rebounded the Sixers. The two games the Sixers won, they out-rebounded the Knicks. This is as close as it gets. I think the differential in points, and Chris, you can speak to how hilarious this is, through the five games is like Sixers plus two, something like that. Like it's it's just so tight-knit.
Yeah, yeah. No, it is extremely tight. That's kind of how I felt throughout this entire series. These teams, you just watch the end of these games, tight is almost an understatement when you look at these teams. They're almost the same in a lot of ways. And even the way they were both offensively rebounding the ball, trying to give their offense extra opportunities in Game 5, it just almost looked the exact same. But kind of what I wanted to draw some attention to more as a neutral here, and obviously you guys have more of a kind of a ventured interest in this due to maybe your biases or lack thereof of biases. But for me, as someone who kind of admittedly doesn't like these two organizations, every time you tune into a game in this series, you're going to see something special and something you haven't seen before. Every time. They have, this five games we have watched so far up until this point, it has been a guarantee of a great 2.5 hours. It just has been. And I don't think any of the other series have had that. I think the Lakers series, to an extent, you were going to get a close game no matter what. It felt like an inevitability you were going to get close games. But this Knicks series, it's an inevitability that you see something special. And you don't get that very often, especially in the first round. Obviously, the NBA playoffs are for things like this, to always see something special. But just the inevitability that has come with how great these games have been and how special these finishes have been, it's been awesome to watch. And honestly, I don't expect anything less of Game 6. I expect the same amount of fireworks.
Just looking towards Game 6, 9 o'clock, which is, Chris mentioned, such a strange start time. Oh, I have so many problems with that.
I did not know that. Campaign said that it's the latest game he's ever played in. Obviously, you know,
local.
He's been on the West, yeah, so like adjusting for time zone. He said he's going to have coffee before the game because he just doesn't. He doesn't know how he's going to do it.
But why? Is there a first game tonight?
Yes.
Bucks and Pacers.
And it takes place in an earlier time zone.
This was like earlier in the football season when they had the Texans playing in the night playoff game, and they had the Texans playing in the day game in their dome, and then they had Kansas City and Miami playing in Kansas City at night when it was like -30 yeah. degrees out. Like, yeah, just switch the game.
Just switch the games.
But yeah, no, that is definitely a component. A 9 o'clock game, especially local, you never see a 9 o'clock local time. It should be interesting, and especially in that environment they're going to be playing in, I'm sure it'll be even more rowdy at 9 o'clock. Even more time to drink beer. Even more time to just be silly.
I like that you're thinking ahead. Philadelphia has been having some ticket issues in terms of who's going to get the tickets. They're giving tickets away.
What's up, Nets fans? Reportedly. It's James Harden. I'm covering half your ticket costs if you come out to the Clays.
You remember that? You remember the subsidized? You remember the organizational subsidized fan appearances? Philly's going all out.
I remember Trae Young. I remember Trae Young bowing at center court.
What did he do
that same week? I think.
What did he beat the Sixers too? And then what happened? They've never made it that far again. God bless.
Neither have the Knicks. Go on.
Hey, 2021 feels like an eon ago. It was a fun time.
Isn't
for
that?
Basketball,
and when he just said that does feel like a very, very long time ago.
But with what I was saying in regards
series, this rude kid over
here. Oh no, I'm enjoying the banter. It's all getting good fun. You gotta love the fodder when you get into this line of work, but. I would have a cup of coffee. I'm going to be anxious enough as it is before this game because, as both of you have alluded to, the series has been spectacular. I can remember years as a kid where it would be inevitably Cavaliers-Warriors in the finals, and you just knew it was going to happen, so none of the playoff games seemed to really matter as much. The last couple of years, we've seemed to stray away from that. It could be because super teams are dying. It's a new generation of stars. We'll touch on a little bit of that later in the pod. But now the competitiveness is through the roof. Two stars in Philadelphia. Maxey is a bona fide star. Embiid, a superstar. Brunson, slowly, slowly escalating what he's able to do game over game, it feels, month over month. This series is going to come down to the wire. I feel as though this is the sort of game where having someone like Josh Hart on your team will benefit the Knicks in a big way.
Yeah.
Because we know Embiid could start this game wonderfully. He could have 20 first half points, but he's going to run out of gas at a certain point. Teams run out of gas in the playoffs because not everyone is used to running at 100% for a full 48 minutes. Josh Hart runs at 100% for 48 minutes for 82 games a season if he's healthy for all 82.
Yeah.
Thibodeau wants his team to play at that intensity, and in a series like this where every game has been a razor-thin margin. That could make the difference. Having a spark plug guy like a Josh Hart could make all the difference. You're going to need DiVincenzo to score. You're going to need Brunson to be Brunson. Now, I don't think it's not a given that he'll have to drop 40 points or something to that effect.
Right.
You need 25 to 30 from Brunson. That's typically what he's going to give you anyway. You shouldn't expect any different, but it needs to be an efficient 25 to 30.
Yeah, and I would love to just, on one thing you just said, Colin, love to just touch on it. There's something about getting accustomed to playing the hard kind of brand of basketball throughout the year and playing hard for a large amount of time. And there is almost an aspect of abruptness that comes with the playoffs and maybe not playing your hardest coming into it and then immediately kind of having to shift into fifth gear when the playoff starts. Excuse me. Seems like the teams with the most success are either the ones with the players that can just turn it on. They have the, you know, most effective turn-on switch where they can just do that, players like Jimmy Butler, or the teams that just don't shut it off, and it's just on all year long. It's the faucet that doesn't stop, and the Knicks feel that way. I just want to talk two things, my silver linings for the Knicks, things I've been liking about the Knicks, which, as these two gentlemen know, is rarer and rarer these days. Number one, the whole deuce thing on a three is the coolest thing I've ever heard in my life. When he takes a three and the entire arena, specifically a road arena, yells his name into like a almost like, I don't even know how to describe it, like a Lou Gehrig type boy. Like, it's so cool.
And, you know, people thought, I forget who it was, but a couple road reporters, like the first time it ever happened, tweeted, they were like, wow, Knick fans really like, really aggressive. Just like, what a yeah. fan base. Like, this young kid gets in the rotation, catches the ball, and he doesn't even get to shoot. They're booing him every time he touches it. And Knick fans had to be like, no, that's deuce, not boo.
And I was watching the game with my dad. We both looked, when we heard it for the first time, we looked at each other, and I was like, do they do that? And he's like, I think they just did that just now. And I was like,
no, they
wow.
do that.
Second thing. There is, you know, obviously I have a level of hate with these both of these organizations, one a lot more than the other. But there is something about New York people getting in the crawl of Philadelphia people. Just it just itches me in the right way. Just a little bit. I don't care. It just itches me in the right way.
Do I have time for a quick story?
Absolutely.
Here from Adventures in Philadelphia on Sunday. So I was in Philadelphia for that game.
That's why we're here, Colin.
We covered the game, went to the press conference, all that fun stuff, walked out of the arena looking for a cab, and the reception was really bad because my phone is really bad, so I'm looking for reception. I walk over towards the Link and Citizens Bank, this entire complex they have in Philadelphia. It's quite the scene.
Beautiful.
And this couple with Philly jerseys on comes over and goes, oh, why are you wearing a suit? Oh, I was just working. Oh, are you a Sixers fan? Well, I'm from New York. You're not going to like me too much today. And they just walked away and looked so mad. They
yeah.
looked so mad. The guy looked like he wanted to.
And you're a professional.
Oh, yeah.
So
they just walked away.
How are you mad?
So mad. They had a few in them, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But it was just that feeling of New Yorkers travel down there on the Amtrak. They travel down there by car. They made Philadelphia fans look poor on Sunday in the sense of they're not there supporting their team. They supported their team poorly on Sunday. I don't think I've ever seen that.
I don't think I've ever seen Philly do that to anyone else.
Because typically, you go to the Link, you go to Citizens Bank Park, it's a zoo. Last postseason, I was on podcasts here talking about how Philadelphia, the Phillies, have the best home field playoff atmosphere of that tournament. And I almost thought that was going to carry them to a World Series. Now, it didn't, but the point is, for the Sixers not to have that fan turnout was a major factor in Game 5 in the sense of if you're Jalen Brunson, if you're Josh Hart, it doesn't feel like you're playing a road playoff game the same way it's going to feel like if you're playing a road playoff game if you're in Boston.
Right, and it feels like when they come into this arena and when Knick fans are taking it over, it doesn't feel, Colin, like the city isn't supporting them. It doesn't feel like a Philadelphia problem. It very much feels like a Sixer problem. It feels like a problem of where this city is losing major amounts of interest in this team.
Well, that would never happen with the Eagles, and that's
no,
the truth.
That's,
it's an Eagles town. It's a big football town, and rightfully so. The Eagles have had a great team over the last couple of years, even when they were bad. People were still showing up because the love for that team runs so deeply. I think it's because of the type of players they've had. You look at the Sixers, since AI, who has been that guy for them? They had a long, long drought of being terrible. We
Iguodala carried the crown for a little bit.
Oh, boy. Well, if that's what you're banking on, then of course no one's going to show up.
And also, if you want to see what mediocrity looks like in Philadelphia from a fan interest perspective, they just have to go look and see who they share the building with.
Oof, yeah.
Unfortunately.
The Flyers, yeah. Well, that's a team that I have no love for.
And the Philadelphia Soul. Do not forget the Philadelphia Soul of the Arena League.
Well, Wells Fargo... very nice arena. I had never been. And
massive.
KP, maybe you can back me up here. It's a nice arena.
Oh, it's
Jumbotron
awesome.
Huge, too. The amenities seem nice.
No, like, but the Jumbotron was crazy because it's like, you know those curved PC screens that like the real nerd gamers have?
Yeah.
It's like four ways.
Yeah.
So there's the two wide screens and then two little ones, and they're all curved. No matter where you are, you've got a Jumbotron. And if you've got one of the bigger ones, you've got, you know, besides the Mets, like, I don't know. I haven't seen one larger. Where is it? I think it's in Cleveland that they call it the Humongotron.
That thing is huge.
Yeah, but it's like, that's too much. Like, the fact that, like, you're in, like, a serious playoff game, like,
true.
You know, like, real grit and grind down to the wire. It's like, well, folks, we've got to take a look at the Humongotron to see what happened on that replay. Like,
Cuban's got a big one in Dallas, too. Huge one in Dallas. That's like, especially that's one of the bigger buildings.
Yeah.
I even, last time I was in Philly for basketball, I watched my Tar Heels go to the Final Four 2022. Just so good for that format, especially the national games, like something like that, Elite Eight, something like that, especially with the size of it. It works perfectly, and great place to. Was that your first away playoff game, right?
Yeah, it was a great experience. I'm certainly thankful to FUV and KP for making it happen. KP was the one that initially pushed for it. I'm so glad he did.
Should we transition to another KP?
Ooh, not quite yet.
Not quite yet. I jumped the gun.
Let's give our predictions for Game 6.
Okay.
Speaking of KP, I'm going to swing it to you first. What's going to happen here in Game 6 tonight at 9 o'clock?
So, I think now each team has won a road game. The ice has been broken there, right? Like, this is just a war of attrition. The Knicks are down another body. Bojan Bogdanović out for the season and probably some of next year, too. He had successful foot, ankle, somewhere surgery the other day. In a couple weeks, he'll have wrist surgery on that left wrist that was nagging him all playoffs. I mean, the guy's just bruised and battered. New York didn't even play Precious Achiuwa in Game 5 because they had two healthy centers. So, should they have? Yes. Why? Because Mitchell Robinson has fouled on three-point shots before. Like, that's a thing he has done several times before. The Knicks have to learn from that. They have to learn that he kind of plays to his assignment a little too much. Can't really adapt. And that's fine. You know, it's not the end of the world. It's a coach's dream. But he was in too deep of a drop on the maxi, you know, 35-foot bombardment of a shot to send things to overtime. And Achiuwa would have been good out there to just switch everything. I think the Knicks know these adjustments need to be made. And I think they know that they're running out of gas. So this is going to be an all-out game from New York. Philadelphia knows they need to win it. I think New York is going to treat this one like they also need to win it. They're not the kind of team that's going to rest on being able to play Game 7 at home. You know, Tom Thibodeau will pass out on the sideline before he admits defeat in any game. And obviously that's not like a basketball take. It's more just like a narrative, funny thing. But for me, you've seen the Sixers adjust. Games 1 and 2, they sent all the attention to Brunson. They said, the rest of you guys are going to have to beat us. The rest of them beat them. So for game, like the second half of game 4, and also mostly for game 5, they shifted a lot of defensive attention to Josh Hart on the perimeter. And that allowed Brunson the space to score 39 in the game 3 loss, to score 47 in game 4. And now I think the pendulum is going to swing back a little bit. But we have yet to get a real signature game. We've gotten a signature moment, but we have yet to get a real signature game from Dante DiVincenzo. I think he's the X factor tonight. I think he has over 20 points.
He hit the biggest shot of his life through two games ago. I feel like the moment almost,
he got the signature moment.
But it's his game. When people think of the game, it's the DiVincenzo game.
Because
of the shot. You don't think so? In some respect, am I even arguing with you? It's more like I want to give him that credit.
Yeah,
like,
no,
that's
you're
his
right.
Game.
You are right. But one play
is right. one play.
And they should have made the first one.
They wouldn't have needed, of course, they wouldn't have needed that shot if he had had a better 46 minutes.
True.
So, I mean, to start the 46
game. 46 minutes. Relax, Thibodeau.
So, it's a funny, oh, he introduced a funny Tibbsism. I'm going to use it. I think that DiVincenzo has a signature game tonight. I don't think it's necessarily his fault he hasn't had amazing games. The Knicks aren't really moving the ball his way. That's okay. Josh Hart was shooting the lights out the first couple games. Jalen Brunson the next couple games. Like, it's okay to ride the hot hands. I think tonight the hot hand is DiVincenzo. Will you see Mitchell Robinson be able to stop Embiid the way he has throughout this series? I think so. And the reason, and one of the biggest reasons I'm picking the Knicks to close things out tonight, in the 38 regular season games that Joel Embiid played, he played over 40 minutes one time.
That's ridiculous.
In games 3 and 4, he played 40 minutes each time with a short rest.
In Skechers.
He came out, respect, he came out in game 5 and because of the overtime, played 48. So, no, he didn't play every minute. I think Josh Hart literally did. But he's conditioned for that at this point. We know that. For Embiid, 3 games straight, 40 minutes. With the highest minute total coming in the most recent game. That guy, unfortunately for fans of the game of basketball, is just not 100%. And I think tonight you will see him struggle to pace himself. Like, I think the Sixers will come out with the home crowd. They'll win the first half. They'll go up like they usually do on this Knicks team. You know, the Knicks start the first quarter in a hole every time because the offense isn't going. Dante's not hitting shots. Jalen's still feeling things out. I think they do it again. And I think Philadelphia wins the first half. And I think in the second half, a combination of the Knicks' persistence, the Knicks' knowledge that they can't afford physically to go another game, and how exhausted Embiid is. Also, now after last game, they have some answers as to what to do defensively with Tyrese Maxey. It's like we said before the series. Have Ananobi help, not be the main assignment. The speed that you cannot teach, you also can't teach someone to defend. Have Ananobi be the help defender. For all these reasons, you know, Embiid exhausted, Knicks persistence, Thibodeau game planning. I'm going to go with the Knicks to close things out tonight in a close one. I'm going to say like a 4-point win. That's only 4 points because of like late free throws. Like, it would be even closer if it could be.
What do you got, Chris?
You know, I got the Sixers. Like I say, I've got the Knicks. What? I don't care if they're playing the 89 Lakers. I don't care if the Knicks are the 89 Lakers. I don't think I'm going to pick them to win a game. Just more family thing than actual basketball analysis. But kind of looking at this game, and if I'm going to be unbiased as I can, kind of from a Sixer perspective, looking at how this team has played, we haven't had an Embiid game. We just haven't. Not even that we've had an Embiid game. We haven't seen Embiid. Like, actually haven't seen Joel Embiid in the way that we are used to seeing him in a lot of ways. Obviously, it's easy to say Maxey shot all his bullets in Game 5, which is fair because it really felt like he was having maybe one of the greatest performances of his life. The thing now, the Knicks' pressure is underrated here because they do. I think Game 7 at home is a place they're comfortable in, but not a place they want to be in a lot of ways. And I think this Game 6 to them feels like a Game 7 in the way it feels like a Game 7 for the Sixers. I think for both teams, this is must win in a lot of ways. And when I look at both of these rosters, just seemingly on a just who's been there more, who has been in this situation more kind of basis, I'm just going to take the Sixers. And I just think that home court obviously didn't help them a ton. Was that Game 4 they lost? Game 4 they lost, right? Was the Brunson game? Obviously, the home court didn't help them there.
They won Game 4. Sixers lost game four.
Yes, that's what I was saying. Okay. I think Sixer fans step up tonight. I think Sixer fans come. I don't think it'll be a Knicks building. I think it's easy to think that because of how crazy it was earlier in the series, but I think Sixer fans smarten up a tiny bit tonight. And I think that, honestly, they get a real game tonight. And I don't think it's close either. I think the Sixers roll tonight and they actually get a legitimate win heading into Game 7, where I don't think it'll be more than a three-point lead for either team in that Game 7 the entire way. I think it'll be one possession literally from whistle to whistle. But this game tonight, I think it's just Sixers all the way. And also, just a little side point before we end this. Nick Nurse, you little coward. Play Buddy Hield, you little coward, all right? He's just sitting on the bench. He's awesome. Play him. Nicholas Batum is terrible. Play that guy, please.
So you see the length that Oubre and Batum brought to the table that legitimately turned Jalen Brunson's water off in games 1 and 2. And then you see the lack of impact that Dante DiVincenzo has had on the series. And your takeaway is, play their version of DiVincenzo over the lengthy defender. I don't get it.
I'm
saying I think those offensive woes can still exist, and I think the Sixer team time and time and time and time and time and time and time again down the stretch can't get buckets unless Tyrese Maxey runs 20 miles an hour toward the rim and gets a layup. So they need someone like Buddy Hield on the wing that can maybe make a three, for the love of God.
Yeah, Batum made a couple of really nice shots in the play-in.
They
wouldn't be here if not for Nick Batum. That's the truth.
Again, that's a whole other series.
He practically won them that game.
He's played five in this series.
But when you're a veteran as well, and I'm not saying Buddy Hield hasn't achieved that status.
He's much older
than
people think. Buddy Hield is a veteran.
But Batum has kind of had a different level of experience.
Buddy Hield is 31.
The association. That's insane to think about how long we've been watching the sport then. Oh, boy. Batum is older.
But I remember real ones watched Nick Batum and Wes Matthews and LaMarcus Aldridge.
Batum goes to dynamite.
Portland, yeah.
Batum goes great dynamite.
Team.
Shout out.
Entertaining team.
Shout out Stuart Scott.
Facts.
Yeah.
But
always.
What I kind of want, just going to that point you just made, Nicholas Batum, great in the play-in, last five games down the stretch has not been good for them offensively.
It was an article in The Athletic where he had said something to the effect of, yeah, I know I'm not going to give like 20 points a night, but you know, you're going to get something different all the time. Like, you know what, though? I kind of like that he knows where he's at. In this day and age, having that type of self-awareness is rare.
Right.
And it's with that I have to make my pick.
Right.
Because from a self-aware place, I know that I had picked the Knicks to win in 5 or 6. I'm very aware that if this series goes 7, it is a coin flip. I don't know if home court advantage at that point is going to matter much, because Philadelphia will have all the momentum in the world. I think basketball is a game of runs. I think the Knicks have to win this series tonight. I'm going to pick them to win game 6, razor-thin margin, as the rest of these games have been. The one caveat I'll add to that, if the Knicks are going to win, 3 people need to step up. It's going to have to be Josh Hart, OG Anunoby, and they need to play Precious Achiuwa. I had said this March. You're going to see Precious Achiuwa have an impact in the playoffs. Everyone kind of chuckled when I said it, but now he's going to need to play, because I just like the size that he gives and the versatility he gives, because he's a little bit quicker than Mitchell Robinson. He's a little bit faster. He's not as strong. He's not as tall. All this other, you know, physical attributes that you want to go through. But that versatility could matter in this series, especially as it pertains to maybe bringing some help defensively. And the Knicks are going to need all the help they can get. As far as Anunoby is concerned, he was efficient in game 5, 7 of 12 from the field, 2 of 5 from range, 17 points. I wouldn't be surprised if we saw Anunoby put up somewhere around that again, maybe 20 points. DiVincenzo and Hart as well have to step up. I'm taking the Knicks, razor-thin margin in this game. It's going to be close. 9 o'clock in Philadelphia. The last piece of Knicks news that we do have to touch on. There's been scuttlebutt, and that's what I'm going to call it,
which
fodder.
I saw on the rundown, and I wasn't totally sure what it means.
It's fodder.
Fodder.
There's been some talk around the association that Devin Booker would like to play for the Knicks. Stephen A. Smith said as much. We don't know if that's accurate. There's been people saying it's not accurate. There's been folks saying it's a one-sided interest. Regardless, I think it's important that we touch on it and just swing it around the room here. KP, this is an interesting development, because it feels as though it would fit in some respects, and you've been on this for a while, saying that Booker is the Knicks' golden goose.
Oh, yeah. I mean, since they brought in Leon Rose, he's the guy that they have always seen as, like, the long-term, you know, final piece. Of course, I think Jalen Brunson was just as much as part of the plan, getting him in first. I just – Devin Booker –
you know, you can use this season against him and probably should, but within a rational context. So, like, we can kind of talk about the Suns here a little bit too, right? Like, they legitimately just said, if we have Kevin Durant and then two guys who can, like, each half play point guard in Beal and Booker, and then Yusuf Nurkic down low, who was a stud in that role, by the way. He totally bought in to being who he needed to be. Much respect. They got Grayson Allen and Eric Gordon, and then a bunch of minimum deal guys that, like, I don't care to sit here and try and remember who the hell. Like, yeah, Okogie, probably a good signing, and then they ended up not even, like, playing him much. KBD, Bol Bol, not serious. So basically, like, that was never going to work. Everyone smart knew it was never going to work. A lot of people looked and went, oh my God, big three, KD, Booker, Beal. Oh, and they have, well, they have no depth and they have no point guard and they don't have a power forward who can defend or pass like an Aaron Gordon or like a prime Nick Batum who can shoot, right? Like, they're power forwards, like the swing position, you know, like whatever you can do really matters and whatever you can't do really matters. And they just had no one. It was like KD de facto. It was a joke of a decision to not stick with Booker and KD and then use that salary, the Paul deal, all that, to go ahead and fill out guys 4-10. Because I guarantee you, Booker, Durant, Nurkic, Allen, Gordon, and then, like, serious depth, like go get a backup big, go get a Daniel Gafford from Washington.
Love him. Love him.
Go get a backup wing, like a real one. One where people are like, oh, it stinks. You can only play 18 minutes a game out there, but their starters are so good. Someone like that, like a point guard. Tyus Jones was out there. I'm not saying he's the answer to any contender's problems.
I like Tyus.
But Tyus Jones with Booker and KD and a serious starting four and a Nurkic. Like, there were so many ways to build this team, and they chose to do it unseriously, and now they got unserious results. Devin Booker is a guy who has the playmaking in him to spell a Brunson when they're staggering minutes. But he shouldn't be your full-time point guard. And that was a misallocation of resources, a misevaluation of talent in your own building. Probably one of the more embarrassing ways to go out. Like, look at the Cleveland Cavaliers. They looked at their roster and they said, this team is ready for an all-in move for a top-tier guy. And they went and got a top 15 player in Donovan Mitchell, who will maybe get them out of the first round for the first time in 2 years. Like, okay, you know, like, that's a real big misevaluation of the talent in the building. People said Minnesota did the same thing, overrating Anthony Edwards too early, overrating Karl Anthony Towns, going out, paying the all-in price for Rudy Gobert.
Which some people said might be the worst trade in NBA history.
Where are we now?
Exactly.
And Edwards made the leap and made it worth it. So I think Cleveland really messed up. I think Phoenix really messed up. These teams really misevaluated what they had in the building. And for Phoenix, yeah, they're going to run it back. Yeah, they extended Grayson Allen. Yeah, they're going to go get bargain bin guys again this summer. But I think it's got to be wearing on free agents, like, going to play with the Kevin Durant team for a year. You know, like, that's just not the proposition it used to be. They don't win. He, like I said on the last one-on-one, you know, the guy's like a hurricane. He comes in. He destroys everything you have going on, from what you've built, your culture, to your draft capital, your asset base. And yeah, you're not supposed to hold on to draft picks, right? It's not like the winner every year is whoever has the most draft picks at the end of the year. That's, you know, Sam Presti would have won something in his life if that was the case. But I just can't look at this team seriously. Like, I do think Booker leaves in 2025. I do think the Knicks and a team like the Thunder have assembled themselves as the premier destinations for a top-of-the-line final piece acquisition move. And you know, Booker has a great relationship with Leon Rose. That was his agent. He was there when he signed the $158 million rookie extension, advising him, you know, as he signed the dotted line. I just think that New York's the natural landing place for him. I've been saying it since, maybe March 2020. I've been saying Booker to New York is like something to watch. And, you know, I know Nick beat reporters are kind of infamous for like insert top 40 player here to the Knicks is something to watch. The organization has their eyes on insert top 40 player here. DeJounte Murray, Karl-Anthony Towns, Zach LaVine, Bradley Beal, you know, you name them, right? But I don't do that. I don't just go out and say, oh, they might get this guy. They might get this guy. They might go after this guy. Like, the only guy I've really done that with is Donovan Mitchell. And lo and behold, they were really in pursuit of him last offseason. That said, I wouldn't expect them to go all out for Mitchell this summer. I think they try to run things back. They'll extend Randall, who just went back to Aaron Mintz at CAA. Weird, like, six-month stint with WME. And then, after that, I think you see, like, a Bogdanovich extension of some kind. They'll probably guarantee his money, even if he won't play, because I just don't know who they'd target with the MLE that they'd free up, unless it's Kelly Oubre Jr., funnily enough. And then Randall and Bogdanovich for Booker would be the move in a year, July 2025. Will that actually happen? I don't know. But I've been saying it probably will since 2020, and 2024 is not when I plan to change that.
Yeah, when I think about Devin Booker, I feel like Kendrick on the new record. I just hate everything about him in, like, so many ways. I hate the way he looks, hate the way he plays, hate the way he talks. I just hate everything about Devin Booker in every way.
You're so negative today.
And,
jeez.
And for all those reasons, he would just be the most perfect Nick, wouldn't he be? Wouldn't he be the most perfect Nick if I just hate everything about him? Yeah.
That's one way to arrive at that.
And Colin, this is not a mood I'm in or anything. Track this back months. I despise this guy in every single way. And it started with the Joakim Noah open gym video. It just did, and I'm sorry. I know that's the birth of a lot of Devin Booker haters, but that's where I came from. It makes sense. When you look at their roster and you just look from a fit perspective on the court, it makes sense. Thibodeau and Booker, I got questions, more like 300 questions of how that would ever work. My thing with Booker and coming into this team is similar to a conversation me and Colin had when we were talking about KD before this and kind of how you configure the roster around him, and there's almost a misconception around that. I don't know what the configuration around Booker is where they win. And I'm not saying it doesn't exist. It does exist. I just don't know what that is yet. And I don't know how to get to that conclusion. It's not like an answer you can necessarily find. But I do think when you look back at where he became so successful, and I think this is an important thing, look at where they had their most success, 2019, right? That's CP3, Mikal Bridges. That team looks very similar to this Knick team right now. You think CP3, Brunson. You think Josh Hart. You think Mikal. There's a lot of similarities between Booker's professional height and where the Knicks are right now. So in that kind of respect, in a lot of ways, this just makes sense in a basketball perspective. I just have second thoughts. Thinking head coach-wise, that culture he built, from my personal biases, I think he's a bit of a wussy, and I just don't think that he could withstand that kind of system, to me.
Man, we're really getting the major league insults out here.
But don't you think I was fair? Don't you think I spun that positively a good amount?
I think you were decently fair. I'll say this on the Booker front. I think it would be a great get for the Knicks. I wonder how you'd go about doing it. Personally, I would like to see if they could do it without throwing Randall into the deal. I don't know if that's even possible. I'm sure there's a lot of other financial factors that we're not aware of, that I'm not aware of, I'd have to read up on, but even just the idea that a superstar may want to go to the Knicks means that the culture is in a place where you are suddenly a destination, and you couldn't say that even 5 years ago. You remember when Kevin Durant entered free agency in 2019? Of course, the Knicks were on the list because the Knicks are always quote-unquote on the list whenever a star is available and needs to go somewhere, but he didn't want to go there, and for reasons we may not know, he just may not like the Knicks as a team. He may not have wanted to go there. He wanted to go to Brooklyn. He got his way. But really, ever since that summer, when was the last time you said a star wants to go to New York? Now, Donovan Mitchell. But is that because the culture was building or just because he wanted to be in New York? And now you're seeing Booker, who has no tie to New York, really, unless I'm missing something.
Maybe Leon Rose?
Well, but that's part of the culture that New York has built with Leon Rose. Worldwide West is part of that culture as well.
They've established it, right? Like, the Nets established a culture, and then KD and Kyrie were like, this is a team that's desperate enough to both give us everything we want. Or sorry, this is a team that's both desperate enough to give us everything we want and also well-built enough with their culture for us to come in. And you know, KD was like, yeah, I like Atkinson from, like, YouTube highlights. Like, okay. But, you know, like, it worked out, right? But then the problem was, I think the Nets enabled them a little too much to the point where, like, they weren't used to hearing no. And if you read about some of the things that the Nets were paying for them and Harden behind the scenes, it gets a little out of control.
Let's shift attention away from the 2021 Nets for a second.
So, with that said, I think the New York Knicks have done a great job of having a star come in who was never a star to anyone and to grow into a real, you know, top 10 debate player, a superstar debate player who is all about Thibodeau, all about keeping the main thing the main thing. You know, Jalen Brunson will score 39 in a playoff game in a one-point loss or whatever, and you try to just ask him about where the buckets came from. You know, like, did he feel like the defense was giving him different looks? And he'll just tell you, I feel like we lost a game where we gave up 43 points in the third quarter. You know, we just got to be better. We got it. Like, there's nothing about me, me, me. And that's the kind of infrastructure that can take in someone like Devin Booker and try and put that energy in the right direction, in the Thibodeau Brunson direction. I know no one expected that pairing to be a star head coach pairing that would be attracting stars when they were put together. No one expected them to be a star head coach pairing. But you got to look at the now, and that's where we're at.
And one more thing, just what you were saying, Colin, describing the Knicks and before this and not a destination, obviously on list, but not a place anyone would want to go. I'm going to metaphorically shoot myself in the chest here, but that's the way my team should be described. That's the way the Nets should be talked about. The fact that the Knicks at any point were at that place is ridiculous and like inexcusable in so many ways that a top five brand could even be at that point. And honestly, just taking it forward, thinking about the future, where the Knicks now are, obviously a beautiful place, they have to have awareness that that's a possibility. Like, they can't think that their proverbial poop doesn't stink. Like, they have to know it's a possibility to fall into mediocrity again, which I think was one of the main reasons why they fell into that mediocrity, because they didn't think it was possible. They have to have an awareness that this culture matters, what they're building matters, what the image matters, and they need to continue that. That's how you get guys like Booker to want to come. That's how you get guys like KD that actually want to come, and it's just showing the improvement the Knicks have made, and they have to have an awareness that they can't let that go, because it's so important.
I agree. Nobody cares about the sizzle unless the steak is prime cut, so a lot remains to be seen with the New York Knicks. We're running out of time here on Pick and Pop, but I do want to go.
We're done with Knicks talk around, now?
We're officially done with Knicks talk. God. You can breathe easy now. I do want to go around the NBA, specifically with these playoff series. Boston advanced to the second round officially last night.
Now we're transitioning KP.
They dismantled the Miami Heat in Game 5 at TD Garden, did so without Kristaps Porzingis. He's going to be out with a calf strain, I believe it is, for at least the second round. Could return in the conference finals, might not.
It's the same thing Giannis had, the soleus strain. You know, playoffs, you find out about all kinds of body parts he didn't know existed. Guys getting hurt.
Regardless, though, the Celtics going to the second round. This is a team that has big championship aspirations. KP, I have questions as to whether or not they can beat a team like Denver without Kristaps Porzingis.
No, they can't.
Last night was encouraging because they did play with a certain amount of intensity, and Derek White has looked phenomenal so far in the postseason.
He's looked really good. He's someone who, you know, when the defensive attention goes towards the Jays, and this time there's three of them now, Drew, Jason, and Jalen, White can step up. He can be the guy they need him to be in terms of filling the scoring gap, filling the playmaking gap, filling the defensive gap. He's that Swiss Army knife kind of guy, and it's not the jack of all trades, master of none kind of deal either. Like, he's actually good at what he does. But against the best five-man lineup in basketball right now, the Denver Nuggets starting lineup, there's no chance unless you have your all-star caliber big man. I thought Porzingis should have been an all-star this year.
You know, I would have voted for him, but luckily for everyone out there, I don't obviously have a vote. So, you know, but I think Porzingis has been fantastic. I think he was super underrated in the offseason. The fact that they got draft picks to upgrade Smart to him was hilarious. Insanely good move by Stevens. And yeah, for the Celtics, you know, I think they're good enough without him to make it past this next round against whoever the opponent is. But they're going to need him back in the conference finals, unless, of course, their opponent is like a Philadelphia or a New York team that's so bruised and battered that themselves that it doesn't really matter that they're missing a big-time player. Boston's really good, probably the second-best team in the NBA when healthy. But without Porzingis, he's not just one of their good players. He's a stretch five, a true stretch five, who opens things up for all their perimeter creators, and that's a huge, you know, ripple effect, domino effect if they're missing him.
Yeah, I think this Celtic team, I saw them play earlier this year, Tatum and Brown, they're the headline grabbers, they're the kids, they're the guys who kids are buying the jerseys on the concourse and things of that nature. But I watched Porzingis this year, second game of the season when they were in Brooklyn. After that game, I just immediately thought with such a strong conviction, he is their most important player in so many ways. The way, the dynamic and the difference in which they play this year than last, with him in that dynamic of that big player being able to stretch the floor in almost a way of turning the back the clock on Al Horford in a way, in a lot of ways, even though Porzingis obviously more dynamic and a different player. He is so important to this roster. I agree with what KP said. I think they're obviously fine until the conference finals, but I don't know who they'll see in the conference finals. It's one of the more confusing and unclear conference finals pictures we've ever had because we really just don't know who's going to be that other team. I think we all have a kind of strong conviction it'll be Boston, but for the most part, no one really knows who that second team will be. But pushing into the conference finals and even more importantly the finals, without Porzingis, this team is in real trouble. And especially if you got to play a team like Denver or a team like Minnesota, these teams are just such deep rosters and so many weapons and guys like Jaden McDaniels. It'll be tough for them. And I don't know, but I do think this team is great, but don't undervalue the importance of Porzingis.
Boston's been knocking at the door for quite some time. We'll have to see if someone bothers to answer. The Cavaliers and Magic. We'll be playing Game 6 Friday in Orlando. The Cavs lead that series 3-2. They won a big Game 5 the other night, 104-103, despite 39 points from Paolo Banchero. The Cavaliers are one game away from advancing. This series feels like a series of the future, and the future of the NBA. Not that any of these guys will be Anthony Edwards level, but Paolo Banchero certainly could be in that conversation. It feels like a young, fun, frisky series. It's been competitive. I don't know if either of these teams will win a championship, KP, but I wouldn't be surprised if Paolo Banchero shows something in Game 6 and we're looking at a Game 7.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. He's the best player on the Magic right now. I think he's really good. I think Franz is also that good. Franz kind of disappeared for a good amount of the regular season this year. The three-point shooting wasn't there, and that didn't allow the rest of his game to really open up the way it should have. But, man, the Magic are they're the team that gets to benefit from not having to care about who's better because they got both. And with that said, they need a guard. You know, like I'm already looking at the offseason with this team because they're so good. It's like this playoff run is all house money. That said, you know, Cleveland gets a really big play defensively out of Evan Mobley to win them Game 5. The home teams are 5-0 in that series. That series has yet to start. You know, I think Cleveland starts it. And they win a game on the road. So I don't think this goes 7. I think Cleveland closes it out. I think the flip has switched over there in Ohio and that Donovan Mitchell knows he wants to be the kind of player that makes the conference finals, makes the finals. Well, even if he doesn't like the team he's on, even if he doesn't like their approach to the playoffs, setting themselves up to play Boston in round 2, I think he sees Porzingis going down and says, even if it's delusional, says that there's a little bit of hope in the air now that they could make the conference finals, that they could make some noise. And I think he's giving it his all. So for Mitchell, you know, whether he wants Orlando themselves to come get him this offseason, or, you know, a trade to Houston, who was willing to offer lots of draft picks that I don't get why Brooklyn didn't take for a number 3 option, or even a team like Boston, you know, they just extended Drew Holiday to get to make him part of the continuous salary soup there. And they have draft capital, especially like we mentioned in that Porzingis deal, to turn Holiday into Mitchell, maybe, if Cleveland finds a third team for Holiday, again, another summer where Drew Holiday is just like a filler max contract. Sorry, Drew. But yeah, you know, Donovan's going to go somewhere. It's probably not Cleveland. But I do think he's going to try and go out with a bang. I do think he's going to try and go out with shame. You know, not just be like, oh, I didn't like this team anyway, so I'm out of here.
Yeah, I think both of these teams, the Cavs seemingly talent-wise in a better place, but when you look at roster configuration and where they are at the timeline of their situations, it seems like Orlando is way better set up, kind of something KP was alluding to. But also, you look at this Cav team, they're in a talent purgatory that I wouldn't wish against my worst enemy. It's really terrible being a fan of a team that is good enough to make those conversations of a good team, but not good enough to make those conversations of a contender. It's just a brutal place to be, and the Cavs have been there for the last 3 or 4 years or so. I always say if the Nets didn't make the free agent moves they would have, that's what our team would look like. And it's just not a fun place to be as a fan because you need someone else, but you're also not in a position where you could get another great player, so you really kind of screw yourself over in a lot of ways. On the other side of the coin, Orlando is so much fun. It really sucks that no one wants to like live there and go there as a free agent because that configuration and that roster is awesome. They have Oklahoma City vibes in a lot of way. That whole barking and camaraderie that comes with Oklahoma City, I feel that in Orlando. Obviously, the talent maybe not on the same scale, but this Orlando team is fun. Would love to see what they look like if they can either make moves in the draft and get a good young player, get just a good player in general, add the talent to this roster. It'll be fun to see where they go. And just on a level of how hard they play, it reminds me of this Knicks team in a lot of way, of just how hard they play for as long as they play. And yeah, they might lose this series, but as an Orlando Magic fan, I'd be very excited, which is not a sentence you'd say very often.
They're a fun team. I'd be lying if I said I wasn't sort of hoping the Magic could eke this series out against the Cavaliers. I think Paolo Banchero is that good. I've been excited to watch him grow and develop. I still think there might be another level to his game.
Orlando Magic.
I know, the battle of the theme songs. If for some reason, now it won't happen, but if for some reason the Knicks and Magic would play in the conference finals, battle of the theme songs,
that
man.
Is unreal.
Imagine those TikToks right there. But the first game tonight in the Eastern Conference will be between the Bucks and the Pacers. For some reason, the NBA needed that game to happen at 6:30. Well, the Knicks got bumped to 9 o'clock. And this is the shorthanded Bucks. This is not the Giannis Dame Bucks. Both of those guys
we'll
out.
See.
Well, we'll see. I'm doubtful. But
I don't know if they are. They might play.
It has been the shorthanded Bucks.
Correct.
The Pacers with a 3-2 series lead. I would not be surprised if Indiana closes it out tonight, even if one of those guys returns, simply because when you have a series edge, you play with a level of desperation and need to close it out. Indiana, in the back of their minds, has to know that if these guys come back for a potential game 6, which could be tonight, or a game 7, we're looking at a new series altogether.
I think what Chris Middleton showed me in this whole playoffs has shown me that Dame and Giannis aren't this whole team in a lot of ways. And Chris Middleton can kind of be the ringleader for this group of, and not in a disrespectful way, but role players in a lot of ways. And Chris Middleton can kind of be that guy kind of fronting the ship. I mean, those two threes, daggers to tie it up in regulation and then tie it up in overtime, some of the most ridiculous, consistent clutch play I've seen in a game back to front. He was fantastic for them. And this Buck team has been weird all year long. They have Doc Rivers, who I don't think anyone's a huge fan of. I'm a huge fan of him on air. He's a fantastic color commentator. But as an actual coach, especially of a team where you're losing your two best players, by the way, good stat for you, Colin, if I can give it to you. Shout out to Chris Carino Sr. for this one. Only team in history to win a playoff game when their two highest scorers didn't play. Wow. First time ever.
That's an amazing stat. I love
that. Amazing stat, and just shows you the depth of this Milwaukee roster, shows you that teams should be scared of this Milwaukee roster if they can be healthy, because if you add Giannis and Dame to this roster that's already playing well, it's a scary concoction, especially with Bobby Portis playing with the electric factory energy that I expect out of that just consummate professional. But looking at the rest of this series, Indiana, a team I've talked about in high praise the whole year, I've talked about how fantastic that backcourt is. Mathurin hasn't been the guy that I have seen the entire year. I expect him to step up a little bit more, but it's just going to be tough. Milwaukee's won so many playoff games. Indiana has not. I could see Milwaukee just getting through here just enough, just in the nick of time to get their stars back and maybe make some noise. KP?
I I can't help but feel that...
Very opinionated on this series.
It's very tough for me because I can't help but feel that Indiana has just... they've done enough. Like, they've shown what they're going to show, and I think that that's enough. I think the Bucks are such question marks. And sometimes, even if the known quantity isn't higher than the ceiling of the unknown, the steadiness is what lands the ship home. Doc Rivers is like such an amazing coach when he's got a ragtag group of guys that he's got to pull together, unite them under a common goal. Look at your boys, Pat Bev and Bobby P, making things happen. And Cash Money Chris Middleton has been spectacular in these playoffs. I just, with the stars back, if they come back, you know what? Put me down as saying this. If Giannis or Dame come back, the Pacers will win. If the Bucks are the ragtag group again, I know this defies all odds. I think they'll pull another one out.
Wow.
So I'm gonna go like reverse psychology on this. If the stars come back, they've got to reintegrate them. And maybe if it's just Giannis, like there's something there and the Pacers can't deal with his length or whatever. But I just don't. You know, I said the Clippers were going to win game one and the Bucks were going to win game one with no Giannis and with no Kawhi. Both happened. Then Kawhi comes back. I said the Mavs were going to win. They won. So it's like I think the stars have been weird this playoffs. I think trying to reintegrate these stars mid-series has been weird. I'm going to ride that trend. I'm going to go Pacers to close it out if the Bucks guys come back. If the Bucks guys don't come back, probably get a game seven.
Shifting west, the series that didn't live up to the hype, if you believed it had hype in the first place, Nuggets beat the Lakers in five games.
There was hype.
But I don't know if there should have been hype. This was a series last year that wasn't particularly close as it pertains to the amount of games won. Nuggets, of course, swept the Lakers in the conference finals. Listen, I don't know if this Lakers team was ever going to beat Jokic and the Nuggets. They led for a decent amount of time, but just couldn't get the job done. At the end of the day, this is another step in the road for the Nuggets. They're trying to win a championship for the second year in a row. It's very hard to repeat. They certainly threw a first strong punch in this playoffs, though.
Colin, I'm a Laker apologist, and it's one of the more frustrating positions to be in the last 2 years. Because I can confident, with all the confidence in the world, say they could have won both these series. They could have. They could have won all eight games they've played the Nuggets. They could have literally all eight games they've played in all the four games they've gotten swept in, both series, could have won in a real way. And it's so frustrating to watch. Because you look at them, game one and two, they could have literally took two in Denver, which... I don't know how they lose that series if you're up 2-0 going to Los Angeles. But then even past that, it's game five. You're up. It's 3-1. LeBron is dunking in transition and stealing the ball. You feel like you're going to win the game. Jamal Murray shot away from winning the game and having it 3-2 going back to L.A. And everyone talks about it like the Lakers got trounced. They did not get trounced. They lost four close games. It's very similar, and I don't mean to continue bringing up the Nets. 2014.
I think you do.
2013. Well, you do too, obviously.
It's the only time they're going to get brought up in the playoffs.
Not when you bring them up. 2013, we played the Big Three Miami Heat. LeBron, Bosh, Wade. We lost in four games. All four games we lost by 6 points or less. I felt like a crazy person trying to explain to people, we didn't get blown out by the Heat. We lost four of the closest games I've ever seen in my life. It feels the same way right now. Laker fans should feel way better than the media is trying to portray them to be. They don't need Trae Young. They don't need all this crap. They need to lock in this core they have now that has shown they're talented enough, and they really need to get a new head coach. That's the two things, I think, to me.
I don't know, man. We'll have to see. KP, what do you got on the Lakers?
I think this Lakers group is a little better than people think.
Thank you, KP.
I also think that when you're 1-8 against the Denver Nuggets, like there's your answer, right? So it there's no medal.
You play the full game for a reason. I get it.
There's no participation. Like, did you see the LA mayor tweeted out like, at least we won the in-season tournament? Think like unironically, and then everyone was like, please God, delete this. She did, but you know. I'll put it like this. If the Lakers retool and they make smart offseason moves that lean into their formula, I think they can be a good team next year. If the Lakers go out and chase names over fit, like the Russell Westbrook trade that completely doomed this era.
Trae Young.
Trae Young would be name over fit.
That's what, yeah.
I think even DeJounte Murray would be name over fit. That guy's best with the ball in his hands. And that means if he's not a superstar, he's not a winning player. Sorry.
And did D'Lo not show you enough that he could be your point guard next year? I feel like he did.
They ran him out of town.
And he played well.
He might retire before he plays another game in purple and gold. I mean, they ran him out of town. And so, you know, for me, did you see what Ham said? Ham was like, what am I supposed to do as a coach if one of my starters is terrible 10 games in a row? Fix it. Dude, what are you? Why are you
a starter anymore? Probably.
Jesus. Anyway, the guy started Hachimura and Prince and played Cam Reddish all these minutes all season long, and the Lakers lost these minutes by a lot. They were like a negative 80, and he was like, "Well, you know, we're doing our best." No, you're not. Again, you know, if LeBron is training JJ Redick to be his head coach with this podcast and all this stuff, like, I don't think that goes well either. So
you know who the next head coach is? It's Phil Handy.
I don't think so.
It is.
I think it's JJ. I think it might be JJ.
And
Redick.
Then instead of the Lakers on the front, they're just gonna put LeBron's face on the logo.
I think it might be JJ.
Moving
Redick.
On towards the Timberwolves and Suns. Ooh. KD and the Suns got swept by Anthony Edwards and the T-Wolves. The T-Wolves will now play the Nuggets in the second round. Guys, I'll make the first point on this series. I have to apologize to Anthony Edwards in the sense of I don't know if I gave him enough credit, and I gave him a lot of credit to begin with. I just thought this series would be a lot closer than it actually was, and then Anthony Edwards happened, for lack of a better word. So second round Nuggets Timberwolves should be an interesting series.
Yeah, I'm excited for it. I really think Minnesota can do something here in a real way. I think when you look at this roster, it just feels like something built to make something happen here. I was having another conversation with my father this week. Just feels like Denver's ready to get beat right now. Just feels like they're ready to lose the crown. It doesn't feel like a team who's barreling through people and who's on their way to... They don't give UConn vibes, Colin. They give no UConn vibes. They don't give any Danny Hurley vibes. They give like a vibe of a team who is ready to give up the crown to their younger counterpart who is running 30 miles an hour at them right now. And it seems like Anthony Edwards is at the head of that herd. I just want him to shine. Give him the biggest spotlight and just let him do what he wants to do and let him just take over this league and be the face of it. The charisma, the game, just everything about him just screams face of this league. And I'm on the Edwards bandwagon, and I've been firmly in my seat for a while now.
JP, what do we got?
And Edwards is so good. He's better than Kevin Durant today. And we don't need to like lie and be like, oh, but KD has been so good for so long. We're talking about right now.
I agree.
KD's not top 10 right now. Like that's just the state of things. And so for me, it's like, hey, let's keep seeing what this team can do. Let's let them keep building. Obviously, they don't have a lot of draft capital. But the Timberwolves are going to be really good. I think they could knock the Nuggets out. And I think if they don't knock the Nuggets out, the Nuggets win the chip.
Okay. Mavericks and Clippers. Mavericks up 3-2. Won a big one last night. Luka Doncic, 35.7 boards, 10 assists. Won it 123-93. They'll have to play the Thunder if they advance. The Thunder swept the Pelicans. Guys, really quickly, your thoughts on both of those series and potential matchup between the Mavericks and the Thunder there.
I have thoughts, I guess. My one thought would be I think either of these teams can win in a real way. I think the Clippers can do their thing and come back. And I also think, in the same respect, the Mavs can continue their dominance. And just one question, just I'll give it to KP here. I don't get what makes Kyrie buy in and what makes him not buy in. It's like Da Vinci's Code. I don't understand, and I'll just leave you with that.
He's not worried about his security with the team. He knows they really need him. He's not worried about the overshadowing media coverage of someone like LeBron.
Except when he walks four blocks to the game on the street.
I think he deserves a lot of criticism and vitriol for how he's handled situations in the past. I think he's been really good for Dallas, and I think that's that.
It's been a pleasure as always, guys. We'll have to see how the playoffs shake out. That's going to do it for this edition of Pick and Pod. For Chris Carino and Chris Persianen, I'm Colin Lochran saying so long. Pick and Pod is a production of WFUV Sports.